Chapter 12. It's autumn. There are not many of the old lot left. I am the last one of the seven from our class still here. Everyone is talking about peace or an armistice. Everyone is waiting. If there is another disappointment, they will collapse. The hopes are too strong. They can no longer be pushed aside without exploding. If there is no peace, then there will be a revolution. I have been given 14 days rest because I swallowed a bit of gas. I sit all day in a little garden in the sunshine. There will soon be an armistice. I believe in it too now. Then we shall go home. My thoughts stop there and I can't push them on any further. What attracts me so strongly and awaits me are raw feelings. Lust for life. Desire for home. The blood itself, the intoxication of escaping. But these aren't exactly goals. If we had come back in 1916, we could have unleashed a storm out of the pain and intensity of our experiences. If we go back now, we shall be weary, broken down, burnt out, rootless, and devoid of hope. We shall no longer be able to cope. No one will understand us. Because in front of us there is a generation of men who did, it is true, share the years out here with us, but who already had a bed and a job and who are going back to their old positions where they will forget all about the war. And behind us, a new generation is growing up, one like we used to be, and that generation will be strangers to us and will push us aside. We are superfluous even to ourselves. We shall grow older, a few will adapt, others will make adjustments, and many of us will not know what to do. The years will trickle away, and eventually we shall perish. But perhaps all these thoughts of mine are just melancholy and confusion, which will be blown away like dust when I am standing underneath the poplars once again, and listening to the rustle of their leaves. It cannot have vanished entirely, that tenderness that troubles our blood. The uncertainty, the worry, all the things to come, the thousand faces of the future, the music of dreams and books, the rustling and the idea of women. All this cannot have collapsed in the shelling, the despair and the army brothels. The trees here glow bright and gold. The rowan berries are red against the leaves. White country roads run on towards the horizon, and the canteens are all buzzing like beehives with rumours of peace. I stand up. I am very calm. Let the months come and the years. They'll take nothing more from me. They can take nothing more from me. I am so alone and so devoid of any hope that I can confront them without fear. Life, which carried me through these years, is still there in my hands and in my eyes. Whether or not I have mastered it, I do not know. But as long as life is there, it will make its own way, whether my conscious self likes it or not. He fell in October 1918. On a day that was so still and quiet along the entire front line that the army dispatches restricted themselves to the single sentence that there was nothing new to report on the Western Front. He had sunk forwards and was lying on the ground as if asleep. When they turned him over, you could see that he could not have suffered long. His face wore an expression that was so composed that it looked as if he were almost happy that it had turned out that way.
Thank you.
This has been an Hachette Digital production of All Quiet on the Western Front, written by Eric Maria Remarque and read by Tom Lawrence. Produced and directed by Talking Issues. Text copyright, The Estate of the Late Paulette Remarque, 1929. Production copyright, Hachette Digital, 2010.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.